Welcome to the Deep Dives podcast here on the No Ceilings NBA Podcast Network. I'm your host, Nick Agar-Johnson, and I have a very special guest with me here today for her first appearance here on the Deep Dives podcast, Paige Otto. Paige, how are you this fine afternoon?
I'm doing great, Nick. How about you?
I'm doing pretty well. It's the time of year when, you know, it gets, there's a lot of basketball to cover, a lot of basketball to watch, but for the first time in, you know, literally the entire time that I've been a Kings fan, there's actually still important Kings basketball going on. So that's pretty great. That's certainly different.
I mean, hey, you guys are doing better than my sons right now, but who knows, come playoff time when we hopefully have KD.
Yeah, come playoff time, the Suns are going to be very scary. But I mean, the Kings, you know, actually making it to the playoffs is a huge step forward, whereas the Suns were in the finals recently. So I feel like that's, you know, but how's Sun King still going strong here on the Deep Dives podcast today?
Well, we'll have to do a playback of those teams when it comes. It comes to time.
That'll be a definitely calm and chill and no upset at all playback. That'll be
not at all.
No hard feelings. Yeah. So today we are here to talk about a prospect who might not be part of the March Madness going on, but probably has had the best March of any college basketball prospect outside of the March Madness group. So Florida Gators, Riley Kugel. So you wrote about Riley for NoCeilingsNBA.com on Sunday. Go check the article out if you haven't already. But he's definitely someone who really made, you know, some noise in the last few weeks of the season in a very interesting way. And, you know, it was the kind of thing where he wasn't really on draft radars for this year. And yet now with how he's played the last few weeks, there is certainly an argument about, is he a this year guy or a next year guy? So I'm curious, what did you sort of see from Kugel in the recent film that made you want to write this article?
Yeah, so in my piece, I kind of looked more at, you know, his college tape rather than his high school tape, mm-hmm. because there wasn't really that much. But I kind of knew him. He went to Dr. Phillips High School in Florida. He actually led them to their first state title and a runner-up finish. He actually was in the same league as Taylor Hendricks and Calvert Christian. So they've been rivals for quite some time. And then, of course, the Florida Gators and Riley lost to them in the NIT tournament last week. So Taylor's still, you know, winning against him and whatnot. But one of the things that drew me to him was just how he can create off the dribble and his offensive skill set. I kind of noticed that, as I mentioned, in high school, and it kind of just developed even more in college of how he can create off the dribble with, you know, crossover, step backs, especially his shooting ability. So that's like one of the main things that drew me to him, and especially his playmaking ability at a young age.
So the interesting part about Riley Kugel's season is it wasn't just that he got hot down the stretch of the season, but as you mentioned in the piece, there was a bit of a rise for him where after Colin Castleton broke his right hand, Florida was really struggling to find anybody who could, you know, score, who could run the offense. And, you know, as you noted, the Gators were in desperate need of someone to take the key to the swamp. And, you know, that ended up being Riley Kugel down the stretch. And over the last 10 games of the season, I mean, just reading off the numbers here, you know, over 17 points a game, nearly 4 rebounds a game, 1.3 assists per game, nearly a steal per game on 50, 40, 67 shooting. That's pretty solid when you go from being basically, you know, not quite end of the bench guy, but very, very minimal role player to essentially being handed the keys to the offense.
Yeah, and especially with like Todd Golden, he kind of said like, until Kugel displays like even some effort on defense, or like he wants to like actually, you know, be here and like contribute, then he's not going to see minutes. So I think Riley kind of had to step up because, you know, his offense was already there. Everyone knew that, but in college you have to have play some sort of defense, right? And like Colin Castleton at that time, they didn't really need, you know, his offensive ability as much with Castleton still playing. But as you mentioned, you know, over the past 10 games, he reminds me, or he did score 10 straight games in double figures that goes into comparison with Bradley Beal, another notable Florida Gator that, you know, went on to have a really great NBA career and still has with the Washington Wizards. So not saying they're comparable at all, but just had to throw that in there because I found that super interesting. So
it is interesting. It's funny because Kugel also reminded me a lot of another recent Florida guard. You know, his creation off the dribble, his step backs, it's very Trey Mann-esque. And, yeah. You know, I don't, you know, Trey Mann ended up, I think, in some minds falling a little bit. I mean, certainly in Metcalf's mind, because he had Trey Mann like negative fourth in that draft. But, you know, the sort of creation that he can do, that Kugel can do off the dribble, I mean, it's the kind of thing where, you know, it's very interesting to sort of look at his early season film as opposed to his late season film. Because, you know, something that I sort of noticed with his later season film is he wasn't moving around anywhere near as much off ball as he was earlier in the season. So it'll be sort of interesting to see where his offensive fit ends up at the next level, because, you know, it seems pretty clearly that if he's going to be, you know, the main guy for the offense, he's not going to do as much sort of movement stuff off the ball. But given how good of a shooter he is, that's definitely a skill you want to try and take advantage of.
Exactly. And then what I also included in my article, you know, he scores 1 point per off the dribble possessions. That ranks in the excellent category in synergy. And another skill set of his is catch and shoot threes. That also ranks in the excellent category. He's averaging around 1.2 points per possession. So even then, like, as you mentioned, especially with Castleton out, I think it did kind of open up more for him to move off ball and whatnot, and kind of just show his ability there, as opposed to, you know, what he can do with the ball in his hands all the time. And then another thing that kind of caught my eye too when I was looking at high school compared to college is that, you know, he made a lot more passes in high school than college.
Not which, a high bar to clear.
Yeah. I think he only made about 33. He only had 33 assists on the season. And then I was telling Steven and Nathan this past Sunday when we were doing our playback stream for the Miami and Indiana game, how he always, or sometimes when he's in pick and roll situations, he kind of is doing the play too fast. So that's, he doesn't really look at the roll man as much as he should have. He kind of is already dribbling toward the perimeter to kick it out to a catch and shoot guy, kind of like Will Richard. He does that a lot with. So that's like one of the areas in his game I think he can definitely improve on, because he already is doing that on the offensive end. He already has that skill set. And if he can just put all these skills together, he can be a really, he has the potential to be a high draft pick, you know, come 2024.
So that's an interesting part of the discussion, 2023 versus 2024, that we'll get into later. But you already, you know, skipped ahead and did the transition for me to talking about the offensive stuff in particular. You know, it's very interesting because, you know, as you mentioned, the numbers aside, the way that he creates offense for himself is, you know, something that's different. I mean, you know, it's interesting because I'm very high on Chris Murray, so I don't want to, you know, disparage him here. But I mean, the idea being, you know, sometimes someone can put up 20 and 8, and you look at that player and it's like, I don't think he has quite as much off the dribble as, say, his, you know, twin brother Keegan, or say, as, you know, any number of other wings. But, you know, I can see, just with Chris Murray in particular, is like, okay, the role player skills, I totally get, right? You know, he's someone who you can rely up as a spot up guy. He's someone who you can, you know, run off screens off the dribble and have him, you know, square up and get good looks for himself. But with Kugel, you know, a lot of the intrigue in terms of the upside is how much of it he does for himself. You know, he's not just someone who, especially, you know, looking at the earlier season film, a lot of it, he was just, you know, standing in the corner waiting for someone to get him the ball, right? You know, now what we've seen, especially the last few weeks, is he's got a lot more freedom with Castleton out of the lineup to just, you know, keep the ball in his hands and create for himself. And that's something that, you know, is very different from him as opposed to, you know, someone who's just purely a spot-up type of player.
Yeah, exactly. And like we say a lot of the times, like with no ceilings, is that, you know, it takes time.
There we go. Right? 9 minutes in, you're already here.
And so with, at the beginning of the season, you know, you're a freshman, everything's new to you. The game did look like it was kind of going a little too fast for him. And I don't think he really knew how to like utilize his skill set to the best of his ability early on. And with, you know, Colin Castleton, you know, the leading scorer, he's a senior. I felt like he didn't really want to, you know, impose on that
right
too early. So when he got hurt, I felt like he felt more comfortable and just confident of like doing what he's good at and, you know, playing his game. And to go from, you know, barely a 10-minute guy to, you know, having that burst in February and earning SEC, all SEC freshmen is incredible. So I think there's a huge upside there. And I'm just like disappointed we can't watch him in March Madness, because I think he could, you know, really do something on the national stage.
Yeah, I mean, especially given, you know, when he really started to pick up his game, that would have been the perfect time for, you know, him to be able to show it on a larger stage. But unfortunately, the rest of the Florida team was not quite with it in terms of, you know, actually winning basketball games. But I do want to get back to something that you noted earlier, which, so I'm just going to quote directly from the piece. Kugel is fast, twitchy, and athletic for his size as a guard, but the way he moves is very controlled. That's something that really impressed me with the film for Kugel is, you know, he's, I don't know, I mean, sometimes you get, you know, herky-jerky scorer types like SGA or Caris LeVert in particular, I watched a lot of in his early years in Brooklyn, where, you know, the fact that they played a different rhythm from everybody else is actually really helpful. But, you know, with Kugel, it's the kind of thing where it all just looks so smooth. And, you know, that's sort of where the Trey Mann comparison really came into play for me. You know, part of it is just, you know, seeing a Florida combo guard doing what they're doing out there. But, you know, the idea being that he's not someone who's, you know, maybe creating, you know, earth-shattering crossovers, you know, hezzying and having guys like fall over. But he looks like he's very under control, even when he does sort of pick up the pace.
Yeah, exactly. And like, I think defenders know it's coming, but he does it at such a, you know, fast stop. Sometimes he'll bring out the ball kind of towards the midcourt line and then come back in and break you down and then do, you know, the same move, but then go to a different spot. He just, you just don't really know what he's going to do next. And when I was watching him, I did see some shades of like Jamal Murray in him a little bit, just from the shades of, you know, he can stop on a dime, but he can also go super fast. And he just has a great feel of game of like trying to break down his defenders, whether, you know, he's going to the rim to attack. You know, he can dunk. I think he has over like 22 dunks on the season, which I didn't think it was that many, to be honest.
Until yeah.
The numbers.
I was surprised by that, too, because it looked like, you know, sometimes when he has a runway, he can get up and he can throw down over people. But it doesn't seem like, you know, he has that just sort of immediate burst where like he's one step from the rim and he's throwing down on people. You know, it's like he kind of has to load up a bit, which, you know, when he loads up, he can, you know, absolutely destroy people. But it's the kind of thing where he does sort of need that space. And I wonder if it's like a strength issue where he can't really finish through guys at the rim. So he kind of just, you know, eases off a bit. But definitely in terms of just the raw athleticism, it's there for him.
Yeah, for sure. And like you mentioned, I do think it probably is a strength thing, and I'll probably work on it in the summer too, right? But one thing I noticed too, instead of like dunking it all the time, if he has an open lane, he'll do a lot of crafty finishes, whether it's like double clutching at the rim or doing reverse layups or, you know, kicking it out to the perimeter, which I really liked as well. But yeah, I'm just excited for him next year to kind of improve on these things that not necessarily like he's lacking, but just to see more out of.
Yeah, you mentioned the 22 dunks being a bit surprising. I was a bit surprised when I look at the numbers and saw that he was shooting over 50% from two-point range.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think a lot of that is, you know, something that you mentioned in the piece. He only has 24 total jump shot possessions inside the three-point line, right? So, you know, he's not tanking his two-point percentages by taking a bunch of, you know, mid-range shots that maybe, I mean, maybe he's good at, right? But, you know, if you're hitting those at like a 42% clip, that's pretty good for 17-foot jumpers, but that's not going to help your two-point percentage overall. But yeah, I mean, I was surprised that he was that good at, you know, finishing inside the arc, because there are definitely some possessions where it feels like he gets to like 12 feet and just has no idea what to do with the ball.
Yeah, and that's the weird thing, right? Because, you know, he is such a reliable threat from downtown, and he's, you know, reliable when finishing at the rim. So it's kind of like, what does he have to do to incorporate, you know, that kind of percentage wise, like in the mid range, right? Because he definitely can. One of his favorite moves is, you know, he'll do a crossover and then he'll do a wraparound or behind the back right at the elbow, but he doesn't shoot it. When it's kind of like you want him to, because, you know, he can't. He does have a really pretty shot, in my opinion. He rather just, you know, kicks it out, or he kind of does some give and goes sometimes, or he'll just try to finish and get to the free throw line.
Yeah, it's interesting looking at the synergy numbers here. So he ranks in the 86th percentile on dribble jumpers, which is insane for college basketball. But he also ranks in the 18th percentile on runners. And that, I mean, kind of gets to what we were just talking about, right? Like if he, you know, gets into his step back from long range, you know, it's pure. It's going down a whole lot more of the time than most players. But if he gets trapped in that sort of mid-range area, and that was something that we talked about a lot with Jaden Ivey last season, right? Where it's like, you know, he's a good shooter. You've seen him, you know, you've seen him shooting from, you know, 20, 25 feet beyond the arc, right? But once he gets into that like 12 to 18 foot range, it's like he's not quite a three level scorer, because that sort of second level is not all the way there.
Yeah. And I think, you know, that will just come with time, and mm-hmm. hopefully, you know, he can incorporate that, because, you know, as we've seen in the NBA, mid range, you know, there's a ton of it all over, right? And then on teams like the Suns, you know,
this is an example, just random example, you know, for no particular reason.
Just random. but, you know, it's filled with mid range players that can shoot that at the effective clip. And, you know, they can also shoot beyond the arc and get to the rim. So it's kind of like, that's the next key in his development with, you know, his playmaking and defense.
Yeah. I mean, when you have Kevin Durant, Chris Paul, and Devin Booker on the same team, your mid-range game is probably going to be just fine, you know?
Yeah. It, just a little bit, you know, good.
Yeah. Good-ish, I guess.
Yeah. Not the best.
So let's move on to the next section here and talk some more about his pick-and-roll ball handling and playmaking. So one of the things that jumped out to me when looking at the synergy numbers was how good he was as a pick and roll ball handler. And that's the kind of thing where, you know, we were talking earlier about the sort of bifurcation of his offense, you know, in the pre-Castleton and post-Castleton era. Mm-hmm. And, you know, running pick and roll, you know, being the ball handler in pick and roll was actually his most common play type, which is not what I was expecting when I went into the numbers. And yet, you know, it definitely seems like it's the kind of thing where he just got so many more possessions, you know, down the stretch run of the season, running the offense for Florida, that ended up being what he did most. And, you know, we'll definitely get into the passing side of this in a bit, but he was very effective at scoring for himself when he was the pick and roll ball handler.
Yeah. You know, with scoring 0.892 points per possession, which brings in a very good percentile. I was super surprised too, because most of the time when he is in, you know, pick and roll actions, he usually rejects them. You know, if it's coming from the left or the right, he'll go the opposite way and either, you know, shoot or, you know, do a lot of pick and pop or go right to the rim. You know, it's never, you know, as I mentioned before, looking at the roll man, looking at the defense, kind of, you know, evolve around you and see what's available. It's kind of like he already has what he wants to do in his mind. So that's going to just take some more of him, like, you know, reading the college game faster, which will come with time as well.
Yeah, you mentioned how often he rejects the screen, and that's very much a scoring move out of pick and roll, right? You're just letting your big man essentially just be a decoy, right, while you're trying to get yourself into an open look. So it's interesting, because that's the kind of thing where, you know, if he were getting more playing time and more involvement in the offense while Castleton was there, they probably would have run a lot of pick and roll possessions together. And at that point, you'd hope that Kugel would be better, or at least more willing to sort of look for the big man on the roll if he's playing with Castleton as opposed to, you know, the Florida guys behind him.
Yeah. And while you mentioned that, you know, there was a few pick and roll possessions that they had between the two early in the season. One was they would do in high pick and roll action. And obviously, Castleton would roll, and Riley would actually stop like in the mid range by the jump, by the elbow, and he actually would throw alley oops to him, which is like, you know, he wouldn't really do that with other bigs. So I just find that kind of like surprising, not surprising, but like I just thought like if they had more time together, that would, his, you know, pick and roll possessions would probably go up, you know, his assists would probably go up as well.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned the two-man game thing with Will Richard earlier, right? I mean, if Castleton and Kugel would have had more time together, that's certainly a two-man game that is, you know, easier to project, right? It's, you know, very simple, you know, pick and roll big, pick and roll ball handler. Great, let's figure this out, right? Whereas, you know, the Richard thing, it's funny because we talked about this on the playback as well of the two-man game between Jalen Hood-Trofino and Trayce Jackson-Davis, right? It's the kind of thing where, on the one hand, it's a really good sign that they were able to sort of figure that out together as quickly as they were. On the other hand, it's like, okay, you know, how much of this is going to be applicable to when he's not in a situation with, you know, someone who he's very comfortable running these plays with?
Yeah, exactly. And that's just another step of like, you know, figuring out, building that chemistry, because, you know, when you're at NBA, you know, you're going to have bigs that, you know, want the ball in those situations, and you better pass it to them. You know, it's not always going to be, you know, you're going to have the opportunity to score. You know, you have to learn how to play with everyone on your team.
And that's the kind of thing where, you know, the odds of Kugel being thrown into the role that he had the second, you know, part of the season at Florida at the NBA level, honestly, ever is not that great. Yeah. But certainly right away, that's going to be, you know, something where, okay, you know, if you're going to earn minutes, it's not going to be you get the ball on every possession and you get to decide, you know, whether you're rejecting the screen or not. It's like, no, this is the play we're running. And if you continue to not run the play, then you will not get the opportunity to not run that play.
Yeah, no, exactly. And like, I think, he's definitely not going to be an on-ball guard. I don't see him running the one. I see him running the two or three even. But definitely, it would take probably a few years to him even running offense with the way he's playing right now.
So let's talk about the passing stuff. And you were very, very optimistic here with this line. So I'm just gonna give you that. When it comes to playmaking and being a facilitator, there's a lot of opportunity for Kugel here. Which, on the one hand, yes, there is a lot of opportunity. On the other hand, kind of implies that he wasn't really taking advantage of that opportunity, right? I mean, his assist to turnover ratio is very, very much not great. And part of that is, some of the stuff we've already talked about of he's looking far more to score out of the pick and roll than to pass. And, therefore you're going to make a lot of, on-ball turnovers rather than bad pass turnovers if you're just tasked with the entirety of the offense. But you mentioned that you really like his reads in transition. I like his transition game in general. I mean, I think all of it works really well for him. But, again, this sort of goes back to what I was just talking about, where if you're getting to the NBA level and, you're not even trying to pass out of the pick and roll, that's not the kind of thing that's going to earn you long-term minutes. So it's something that, honestly, I don't know. I mean, I don't think he's the greatest passer in the world just generally, but a lot of it is willingness as opposed to, just running the offense and trying to get your own buckets, which, to be fair, it certainly seemed like a lot of the Florida offense was geared to that, right? It wasn't him just being selfish, but it's the kind of thing where he's going to need to be more willing to pass to sort of expand his role going forward.
Yeah, and like when I was diving into the film, I was kind of like, okay, what is the passing like, or where is it, right? And so when I saw the transition stuff and his ability to make those long passes, he did a lot of no looks kind of in the half court once he was finished, grabbing the rebound and getting down the court. Which was kind of, surprising, given that, he wasn't willing to do that just in the half court in general. I think he does feel more comfortable, moving while he's passing instead of, reading the defense and passing, just from like what I've looked at. And this is a small sample size, but from his high school film on Synergy, his turnover percentage was 17.2, which was not the greatest. So he had four assists for 10 turnovers.
Yikes.
Yeah. So, and it's just like I said, like he sometimes, yes, he can make, these reads. He can make the no looks. He can do, alley-oop passes. He can do, a lot of the passes that you're going to see translate to the next level. It's just that he doesn't read it, as quickly as he should. He always does it. He instead of, leading your guy like you want to, he kind of just throws to them, backwards, or he just throws it way too far out. It's kind of like he's not letting it develop for him. So that's kind of just another, thing I was kind of worried about while watching his film.
Yeah, and that's, very important too, because it's interesting that he's shown sort of the flashier passes, but a lot of the sort of more basic decision-making stuff is not quite at the same level, where it's like, okay, great, you can throw that alley-oop, but if the other guy's not part of that, right, that's just flying into the eighth row. And it's the kind of thing where, on the one hand, it's nice to see, that he has the confidence to try those more difficult looks, because, otherwise he's especially you mentioned the sort of size of the windows, right? At the NBA, the passing windows are even smaller than they are at the college level. So, being willing to try those more difficult passes at the college level is definitely a positive sign, but it would be really nice if he got a little bit better at just sort of the basic decision-making passes, right? Like, make a quick decision, right? Don't hesitate, just kick the ball to the next guy rather than just holding onto it and looking for the opportunity to throw a wild cross-court pass. Just hit the guy on the wing. If you're standing at the top of the key, hit the guy on the wing rather than just make it more difficult than it needs to be.
Yeah, and with his passing too, or just his overall game, I think how he kind of reads it, he's going to score first, he's going to get to the line first, or he's going to kick it out. It's not, I'm going to pass it, let something develop, and then just keep, moving off ball. And like, shout out to Albert. I know he talked about this with Colby Jones, and he actually, clipped a ton of his entry passes. I only found like three from Riley, which is, it's not the most flashiest pass in the world, but if you can make it, it's super valuable, right? You're looking into your post, the majority of the time, and Riley isn't doing that. Not saying he will never do it, but it's just something that I didn't notice that much.
And it's interesting. I mean, this is the kind of thing where I'm going to put on my Kings bias here for a moment, but a lot of teams are having post-ups more to generate passes rather than to actually look to score out of the post. And so, you know, if you're an offense that has that kind of system, I mean, the Kings do a lot of, you know, DHO stuff rather than explicitly playmaking out of the post. But, you know, the idea being if you're trying to generate offense by, you know, posting up and getting passes out of the post ups, then you need to hit the entry pass to get to that next step of the offense when you're making those kickouts out of the post. And if you can't get the initial entry pass right, then the whole thing kind of breaks down.
Yeah, and that's super tough, right? Because I think Kugel can do that. And I also think, like, on the offensive end, he can post up defenders. I mean, he's 6'5", 200 pounds. Like, he has a good frame.
Yeah.
His broad shoulders, you know, he's strong as a guard. He can embrace contact. And, like, I think that's another, you know, snippet of his game if he can, you know, add those post up moves, you know, able to finish at the rim out of them and, like, kick it out or, you know, hit the roll man, right? That's just another area he can develop. So that's another thing I'm looking for him to develop to next year.
So let's talk about the cutting and the rim finishing stuff now. I tend to be someone who falls way too much in love with prospects who can cut. And it's the kind of thing where, you know, this is a different discussion, but it's the kind of thing where it really frustrates me when someone's a great cutter on offense and just gets back cut every single possession on defense. So maybe we'll get into that in about, you know, 10, 15 minutes or so. But, you know, the thing with Kugel, though, is given, you know, how much of a threat he is from beyond the arc, you know, both in terms of as a spot up guy, but also as someone who can create looks for himself, you know, defenses have to watch him when he's on the perimeter. And that's not just for, you know, him getting the ball in the corner and spotting up, right? But it's also that, you know, if a defense gives him a little bit too much room, he's not someone who's going to miss that angle to cut to the rim. And that's the kind of thing where, you know, especially given that he's almost certainly going to be in a more off-ball role at the NBA level than he was down the stretch for Florida this season, him being able to cut in addition to his shooting is a huge part of, you know, again, the sort of three-level scoring thing. The mid-range isn't quite there, but, I mean, his scoring around the basket and scoring from long range, they really assist each other in that regard when he's as good of a cutter as he is.
Yeah, and actually, he only has 15 dunks on the season, so I guess I was a little off.
Okay, so he has no athleticism at all. Got it.
Yeah, not at all. but now that you mention it, you know, he is pretty athletic. I mean, per Bartorvik again, 44% of his looks at the rim are assisted. And, you know, you can kind of read that two ways, right? You know, he's cutting off ball, he's getting to the basket, his teammates are looking at him, but he's also not creating looks for him at the rim to finish, right? But he is finishing at an efficient clip. You know, he's 54.8% with, you know, 115 attempts on the season. But as you mentioned, or kind of alluded to, he also gets backdoor cut a lot on the defensive side. But we'll get to that later. But with him, you know, getting to the rim and making these adjustments, it just shows how you, like, as a defender, it's kind of a nightmare guarding him.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if you sag off him, he's probably going to shoot it in your face. You know, if you guard up him and kind of give him the back lane, you know, he's going to go under you and probably, you know, dunk it or, you know, kick it out. There's just so many possibilities that you have to watch out for as a defender.
I'm curious. I don't have these numbers off the top here, but I'm curious what percentage of his looks at the rim were unassisted in the last, you know, month of the season as opposed to the first few months of the season, because I feel like that's the kind of thing where earlier in the season, you know, he was mostly, you know, not operating with the ball in his hands, right? I'm sure probably more of those looks were assisted as opposed to later in the season where he had to create a lot of offense for himself and the rest of the team. I'm willing to bet that, you know, I'm willing to bet that many of his unassisted looks at the basket came, you know, in that sort of last few weeks of the season, that last 10 game stretch where he was tasked with the majority of the offense.
Yeah, I totally agree. Honestly, if I would have to bet, probably, you know, mid 50s, honestly, just because of how much of an offensive role he had to carry for the team. I could definitely see that happening. And he also got to the line a lot more towards the end of the season. Yes, you know, he had more minutes and whatnot, but I just saw that, like, even with the minutes he was given at the beginning of the season to, you know, later in the season, he had the urge and, like, relentlessness to get to the charity stripe more. And that's just another game that I really like.
Yeah, that's going to be huge for him. I mean, that's the kind of thing where, you know, it helps pretty much all scorers to be able to get to the line with some degree of effectiveness. But it's interesting because, you know, I talk all the time to the point where people get tired of it about being a partial free throw truther. And it's weird because Kugel's shot looks a lot better than his free throw percentage. And I wonder if that's the kind of thing where if he was, you know, generating more contact and getting himself to the line more, he'd be more comfortable with that as a part of his game. Because, you know, the part of the reason that I tend to buy into free throw translations is because oftentimes you have a larger sample size, right? But mm-hmm. with Kugel, he actually took more threes than he did free throws.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, kind of messes up the whole calculus of that. And, you know, sometimes you get, you know, players who are great free throw shooters who just can't figure it out beyond the arc. Like, they've got great touch from 16 feet and in, but can't get it to 23 feet and out. Whereas other times you get like the Bruce Bowens of the world, right? Where, you know, they never take free throws. They're only in there to shoot three pointers. And therefore they, you know, are a 40% 3-point shooter because that's literally all they do on offense. And then they get to the line and it's a bit more of a struggle. So I was surprised by how much lower Kugel's free throw percentage was than sort of, you know, his 3-point shooting percentage. And also, you know, how beautiful his form looks. It doesn't really mesh with him not being as good at the free throw line, but if he's getting to the line more frequently, even if that percentage does still hover around the high 60s as opposed to, you know, low 70s or even high 70s, if you're getting yourself to the line more, I mean, you know, obvious statement, but 66% at the line is still more efficient than, you know, 50% from 2-point range or 33% from 3-point range, right?
Yeah. And when you know, talked about his free throw attempts, you know, he only took 79 on the season. He actually was, you know, on Florida, the top three free throw attempts, which is crazy. Number one being Colin Castleton with 155. So as a team as a whole, they weren't really getting to the line as much as they should have, right? So it kind of, you know, they relied more on perimeter play, mid-range play, not really counting, you know, Riley. But that's just another part of his game that, you know, his free throw percentage, you know, it being 67% and his, you know, 3-point percentage being, you know, 36, right? That needs to be higher, right? He can easily be, you know, 75, 80% shooter from the free throw line just with, you know, getting to it more and his form. You know, you mentioned it looks awesome from downtown. And I'm not like a shot doctor like Corey or anything, but
I'm not either.
But it looks good. You know, he has a firm base. You know, he has a high release point. I don't really see him, you know, changing his shot, you know, when he is off the dribble or, you know, catch and shoot wise, it looks the same, which is a good sign. So, yeah, I would really like to see that, you know, high 70s or even low 80s there.
All right. We've been teasing it for a while, but we do have to get into the defensive discussion. And
let's do it.
Yeah. So the first sentence you have here on the defensive side, this is a part of Kugel's game that is more telling in where he needs to make the most improvements going forward. It's a pretty positive way of saying not great, not great, Bob. And, you know, again, we sort of mentioned this in passing, but it is rather wild that he has such a intuitive feel of how and when to cut on the offensive end, and yet on the defensive end just gets back cut constantly. And part of that is effort. I mean, you know, I don't want to say that Kugel doesn't try on the defensive end, but I think he could try harder than he does. I don't think that's, you know, a particularly bold statement. But, you know, as you mentioned, he's someone who can get caught ball watching a lot. And the on-ball stuff, I'm not going to say he's Cason Wallace or anything, but, you know, he's okay on ball. I'm not too worried about him on ball, but the kind of off-ball stuff, you know, it's honestly kind of similar to how often he rejects the screen on offense, where it's like he needs to do a little bit better of a job of fitting into a team concept rather than just, okay, that's my man, so I'm going to guard him and, you know, get lost off ball and, you know, get back cut by someone he probably should have switched onto.
Yeah, and like with his on-ball defense, I don't think it's, you know, that bad. Like you mentioned, definitely his off-ball stuff is, you know, the scary part, to put it lightly. So like on-ball, you know, he is in a stance, you know, he does have really quick feet, you know, he can stay with the smaller, faster guards and at least, you know, kind of drive them off the line to the basket or kind of, you know, get in front of them if they're, you know, kicking it out to the perimeter. On-ball, though, he does have a tough time navigating screens.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's, you know, partly it's probably a communication thing, right? Or he just doesn't know, you know, what his opponent's good at, you know, if he should, you know, go under the screen or over the screen. I just see him going straight through it all of a sudden, even getting blindsided a lot, which causes, you know, a lot of defenders to take advantage of that and score on him.
And, you know, part of it, as you mentioned too, he has the frame where it's like you don't, it's not the kind of thing where, you know, watching a lot of young De'Aaron Fox and young Tyrese Haliburton, it's like, okay, you know, this dude weighs like 112 pounds. You know, there's no way he's going to be able to fight through a Joel Embiid screen, right? But, you know, the flip side is with Kugel, I mean, you know, we mentioned in terms of scoring around basket, he could certainly do with getting stronger, but he's got a really solid frame already. It's not the kind of thing where, you know, he's rail thin and he's just getting caught on every screen because he doesn't have the strength to fight around it. You know, it's more just, I think, you know, as you already brought up, right, his decision-making on screens is not where it needs to be. It's not, you know, that he doesn't have the physical tools, because he definitely does have the physical tools. It's more just about, you know, getting consistent with knowing what he should be doing to get around every screen, rather than just, as you said, you know, trying to fight through screens that he should probably be going under and things like that.
Mm-hmm. And one of the matchups that I really remember watching where he had kind of his worst times on ball defending was against UConn.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of alluded it to my piece too, but you know, he would just constantly get shook by Sanogo screens, and he just honestly didn't know what hit him. You know, even though, you know, he was constantly chasing Jordan Hawkins, which, you know, we love here at No Ceilings, you know, constantly trying to fight through stagger screens, and like, he knows it's coming, right? And he just looked lost out there, honestly, trying to figure out what way Hawkins was going. Was he going to go, you know, to the left side, to the right side? Were they going to, you know, pinch the screen and him come directly up at the top of the key? He just looked lost out there. And that's one of the things in his game that, you know, he has to work on, because that's just going to get worse as he, you know, is chasing, you know, Steph Curry, you know, Damian Lillard, you know, those types of shooters. He's just going to have a more difficult time trying to keep up with that.
Yeah, chasing Jordan Hawkins is not a job that I would wish on anyone, to be entirely fair to Kugel, but that's the kind of thing where, yeah, I mean, at the college level, you have Hawkins, you have a few other, you know, motion shooters. Grady Dick isn't quite a motion shooter, but, you know, you have a few elite sharpshooters that you need to guard every once in a while. But at the NBA level, you know, you're getting, you know, Steph Curry and Damian Lillard, right? But, you know, you're also, with the Warriors, of course, you're getting Klay Thompson. But even, you know, guys that don't have the same kind of star power, I mean, chasing Cam Johnson around screens is not fun. Yeah. You know, chasing Kevin Huerter around screens is not fun. You know, it's not just that there's the every once in a while of, oh no, I've got UConn tonight, I got to run around 74,000 screens. It's like, that's the kind of thing where at the NBA level, you're getting that, if not every night, then pretty much every other night, there's someone who's a good enough motion shooter who doesn't stop running, that if you get lost on, you know, even if you get lost on the first couple screens, right, there's going to be two more coming if you're not paying attention to it.
Yeah, and like when he gets lost, you know, it's another communication of, you know, him having to switch with his teammates, you know, just kind of all out of whack. So it kind of just, you know, corrupts the whole defense, right? And it kind of breaks him down constantly. So that's kind of just one thing that he has to work on, especially when he's guarding like zoom action. He gets really lost on that too. He doesn't really know if it's going to be a, you know, handoff, is his opponent going to drive to the basket or kick out? He gets lost on that too. But again, he does have super fast hands. He has a good base. You know, if he continues to work on that, you know, practice that over the summer, I don't see why he can't, you know, improve a lot, right? Because he does have the tools. So that's just another thing that I think he can, that if he does that and to go hand in hand with his offensive skill set, with his off ball defense being, you know, the major improvement area, I think, you know, there's a lot to be excited about.
And on a more positive note with his defense, you know, you mentioned this, but he does have good hands and good instincts, and that helps in terms of him, you know, racking up steals. I mean, he finished with 26 steals on the year, steal percentage of 2.1. I talk about this to the point of beating it into the ground, but steals percentages really do translate very well from college / non-NBA level to the NBA. And, you know, on the one hand, sometimes you're a bit worried about high steals percentage with guys who aren't the best defenders, because it just means they're gambling all the time. But with Kugel, it feels like it's less gambling and just him knowing, you know, when to stick his hand into the passing lanes. And, you know, we already talked about how good he is in transition. That's the kind of thing where, you know, he can get himself into transition and get those easy baskets that way. So that's definitely a positive with his defense. And again, it's the kind of thing where there are some players who get really high steals percentages by gambling a lot, as opposed to just playing good defense and getting steals, you know, by playing good defense. But I feel much more positive about Kugel's ability to jump passing lanes than I do about a lot of the rest of his defense. And that's a good sign given how well that usually translates.
Yeah, and like that's a part of his defense where I think he does have more of a, motor at, right? Because I think he does generally, like getting those steals because it just leads him to more offensive opportunities. And I think when they were playing to Vanderbilt or Ole Miss, he actually got a couple steals from being off ball and cross court, just of him, stunting his defenders and constantly not ball watching, right? So that was a really impressive sign for me to see just in his development, on his off-ball defense and on that end.
So at the very end of the article, you pose a question to the audience: is Kugel a this year guy or a next year guy? And you did the very wise business decision of not, putting your particular opinion here, just asking the fans, right? Seeing what everybody else thought. So now I'm going to grill you for your particular opinion. Is Kugel a this year guy or a next year guy?
So, in my opinion, I think he's next year. I'm not saying he won't test the waters this year. I think he could easily impress with his athleticism on off the dribble creation, his shooting ability in workouts and at the combine. But I don't think he should necessarily go yet. I would like to see a full year of him solely being, the guy at Florida, depending and depending on who they get in the transfer portal, because Reeves actually just declared, so that goes another key factor for the Gators. So he is the guy right now, him and Will Richard. So depending on who they get, I don't see him fully declaring, but I know people on Twitter did say he was a this year guy. Some people did say he's a top 40 pick in their eyes, and like I can see it, but I see it more if he came back next year. And he improved just a little bit, or he showed something different in the areas that he lacks that we talked about.
This is the kind of thing where if this was 5 years ago, I might have a very different opinion about it. But now that college basketball players are actually allowed to get paid for generating billions of dollars for their school in the NCAA as an organization, it's a lot easier to make the decision to say, you know what, I think I'm just going to go back to school. And with Kugel in particular, it's a very interesting discussion, I think, because a lot of his, strengths as a prospect were things that he showed in the last 10 games of the season, right? And it's the kind of thing where, maybe he comes back to school and, next year Florida gets a lot of transfers and Castleton's healthy and he's, towards the end of the bench again. And then maybe it looks like, should he have declared? I mean, the most obvious example of this, and granted this was a tournament thing, but, if Johnny Juzang had gone out the year that UCLA made the Final Four, he's probably a first round pick. And, instead he's like end of the second round slash undrafted guy, just got into a game with Utah, So, he ended up finding an NBA home, right? But he would have probably been a first round guy if he'd come out right after the tournament. And so then the question for Kugel is, do we think that his, run down the stretch was, okay, this is who he can be if he gets the opportunity, versus did he have a really hot 10 games, right? And that's the kind of thing that's incredibly difficult to evaluate. But ultimately, I mean, you brought up the potential of him being like a top 40 pick this year. I think that, especially given where we're at with the 2024 draft class, he has some shot of, working his way into the first round of next year's draft, right? And given that he, I'm sure, will get quite a bit of NIL money from Florida boosters who loved the last 10 games of the season for him, it's probably not worth it for him to say, okay, unless he desperately wants to get to the NBA, right? It's like, I think I probably have a shot at being a mid-second round pick if I declare. So I'm just going to go and prove myself and earn my way onto an NBA team. I don't care where I get drafted. I just, want that opportunity. Power to him if that's his choice. But I think that the opportunity for him to really boost his draft stock, if he comes back for another year, if he gets more opportunities with the ball in his hands to show what he can do, if he can show some of those improvements on defense that we were talking about, then again, he's someone who has a chance to be a first round pick and maybe not even a late first round pick if he returns. It would, I mean, there's a chance that he goes out and tests and some team says, you know what, we're just going to make sure that he doesn't go back to school. We want him on our team. And if he takes a couple years to develop, that's fine. We're going to promise him with the 28th pick, right? Then I would say, yeah, definitely go out. 100% worth it for you. But unless he gets that kind of promise, I think the combination of the NIL money plus what he could prove with more of an opportunity makes it much more worth it for him to come back to school.
Yeah, and I think that's what he's weighing now too, because before the NIT tournament, he actually told reporters at a press conference that he didn't have any ideas of leaving, you know, Florida soon, whether that, you know, being going to the NBA or, you know, transferring. But after the NIT tournament, a reporter asked him, you know, the same type of question, what are your plans, you know, for next season? And he didn't want to give an answer or comment. Mm. So it just goes to show, you know, he is thinking about this. And I think, you know, wherever way, you know, he chooses to go, I think we'll be surprised, nothing less, because I could see both ways, you know, easily. And the first, so if he actually did leave after his freshman year, the only other Florida Gator was actually Bradley Beal to be a one and done.
Here we are, Bradley Beal again.
So he would be, you know, that'd be a huge thing for, you know, the Gators basketball program. And he definitely isn't like, you know, a college basketball prospect that, you know, Bradley Beal was. But to this day and age, you know, I think his athleticism, the way he can create offense for himself, and just like how he can get hot too, NBAs will like, it's just like how you said, it does have to take the right team to, you know, make him that promise of, you know, either going first round, even early second, he might even consider. But, you know, next year's draft class, you know, isn't as stacked as this class. So I don't know why he would, you know, look at this class and be a lower pick, or, you know, have more of a chance to be, you know, first round, even high first round next year.
And, you know, circling back to the sort of discussion of where Florida ended up as a team, you know, this is the kind of thing where, again, you know, he's not playing in March Madness, but I mean, very sort of similar to how Dalen Terry went from like, oh, he's definitely a next year guy to, well, actually, he's going to be the 18th overall pick, right? And, you know, part of that was because Arizona was, you know, in the big dance. I'm sure that got, well, I mean, I don't think anything basketball related is going to get Jerry Reinsdorf's attention. But, you know, the idea being that some NBA front office people saw, you know, saw him down the stretch and was like, oh, this is someone who, you know, we don't want to let him return to school and be, you know, basically do what Jaden Ivey did, right? Go from like probably fringe first round guy to number four overall pick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, look at Dalen Terry now, you know, so many people have been, you know, posting about him on social media saying, you know, he needs to go sooner, right? So I could definitely see that happening for Riley. And I think we'll probably have her answer, you know, right when the tournament's over.
Yeah.
Honestly, or even sooner. So I'm really looking forward to that. You know, whatever he decides, I think it will work out super well for him. I just think, you know, I think I'm kind of set on him coming back next year, but, you know, who knows?
It'll be the kind of thing where I'm assuming he will test but not sign with an agent. And then it's the kind of thing where, you know, if we hear, like, say, you know, April 23rd, Riley Kugel has signed with Clutch Sports, right? It's like, okay, that's, you know, he has a first round promise almost certainly, because otherwise, you know, mm-hmm. you probably would be worth it to return to school. But again, it's the kind of thing where he could decide, you know what, I just want to get to the NBA as soon as possible. If I'm a second round pick, that's fine. I'll get my shot. I'll prove myself. And certainly, you know, it's pretty clear to see in his game that Riley Kugel does not lack for confidence. So maybe that's something that he does that, you know, a different prospect might not be as gung ho about.
Yeah, for sure. And I think confidence, you know, having, you know, the confidence level that he has already as a freshman, and, you know, being able to, you know, turn it around so quickly and, you know, be the reliable piece on, you know, team. I know Florida wasn't, you know, the best this year. Obviously, you know, they're 16 and 17. But, you know, they played in the SEC, right?
Right.
One of the top conferences in college basketball. And, like, you know, he had this remarkable stretch. But I could also see him, you know, maybe wanting to play with some other stars and win a national championship at the college basketball level, right? So that's an option. I know we were talking about, you know, Taron Armstrong in the transfer portal, Keshawn Gilbert, right? So who knows?
Who knows? The theme of all draft discussion everywhere all the time.
Yeah. And NIL money.
There we go. All right. Anything else you want to cover before we wrap this one up?
Yeah, I don't think so. It's been a great time.
Awesome. Well, thank you for coming on. Definitely glad to have you. Yeah, took till March, but we got there.
Let's go.
All right. So she is Paige Otto. You can find her on Twitter at @PaigeOtto_, and you can find her written work on NoCeilingsMBA.com, as well as handling a lot of the social media for No Ceilings MBA. If you've seen a social post on any of the No Ceilings platforms over the last few months, there's a good chance that that was Paige's work. So thank you, of course, for all of that. You can find me on Twitter at @NBAJohnson, and you can find my written work on NoCeilingsMBA.com as well. If you've been enjoying the podcast, please take the time to leave a rating and or a review on whatever podcast player you might be using. That's always much appreciated on our end. And if you have any feedback on the deep dives portion of the podcast, feel free to reach out to me either via Twitter or email nickaj.nba@gmail.com. And as always, thanks so much for listening. Thank you.